Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show once again. Weather remains fairly mixed with March rains making up for any dry spell that we had in February. Once again, I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty, and this week we're also joined by Andrew Mahon from Borbia to answer all our questions in terms of the Borbia piece related to this new suckler scheme that we're focusing on today. This week is our special. This is our special that is focused around the new suckler cow scheme, the SCEP scheme, as farmers are getting to know, the suckler carbon efficiency program. We've lots of questions from you. We've lots of questions that came in on the WhatsApp, on the email, from talking to farmers throughout the week after our shout out last week. So we have lots of questions and answers to go through today. And we'll do that in just a couple of minutes. Remember, if you have further questions, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086 8 366 465. Before we get into the questions and answers, I mean, Adam, if I was to come to you first, maybe just to kind of, I suppose, you know, give us an outline, just to kind of maybe stand back from the scheme a little, the detail of the scheme a little bit, and just give us a kind of an outline about the scheme and kind of what are some of the kind of key criteria.
Yeah, Jack, look, it's a really important scheme to the suckler sector, 250 million over the next 5 years. And look, we've massive interest in it over the last 10 days. A lot of farmers inquiring about it, a lot of farmers asking about getting into it. And we've big applications going in there already. But I suppose it's really, in a nutshell, it's a replacement for BDGP. So a lot of the measures that were in BDGP just transfer across the SCEP, but a few little changes that farmers need to be aware of. I suppose the first one is, right, eligible bull, eligible AI. In the past, in BDGP, it was if you had a stock bull in your herd on the 30th of June every year and he was 4 or 5 stars, then you were okay. And if you're AI and it was 80% of the AI sires, you need to be 4 or 5 stars. That changes to the actual calves that are born on the whole and need to be by 4 or 5 star sires in the each year of the new SCEP scheme. In year one, there's a derogation from that because I guess some of the cows that went in calf that are calved down in 2023 went in calf in 2022, so there wasn't an opportunity to put them in calf to 4 or 5 star sires. People didn't know. So the derogation for year one. But after that, 80% of the calves that are born on your hole and need to be from a 4 or 5 star sire. In year 3 and 4, that moves to 85%, and by year 5, that moves to 90%. So that's really important. And we've had questions there around unknown sires, and if those two bulls run them, what happens? Just make sure that they're both 4 and 5 star bulls, because if they're genotyped and something goes wrong in terms of they're off a sire that's not 4 or 5 star, you'll be in bother there. The female replacements.
Say with that for a second, Adam. Like, I was in Innes at the department meeting on Tuesday night. It was this week, and there was lots of questions around that star piece. Like, and Niall Kilrain was there from ICBF, I suppose, doing his best to field them. And I mean, he kept coming back to the piece around genotyping. Like, you know what I mean? Because a lot of guys think they were coming on the sire side. Like, you know what I mean? I buy a stock bull. I buy it when I buy it, it's 4 or 5 star or whatever. But I come home 2 months later, and it's a 3 star bull. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've shelled out 3, 4, 5,000, whatever it is for this stock bull. Like, I mean, What do you say to farmers that kind of ask that question in terms of the movement and like stars are going to come up and down?
Yeah. So there are two things there, right? And it's very, very simple. The bull needs to be 4 or 5 star at the point of genotyped, 4 or 5 star at the point of purchase. So if you buy him in and he comes into your herd and he's 4 genotyped, 4 or 5 star, if he drops to a 1 star tomorrow, there's no issue there. Once he was 4 or 5 star when he came into your herd, and the second one is genotyped, and the second one is if you happen to breed your own bull within your own herd, it's on his first genotype that they will take the figure. So again, if he's genotyped on the first genotype and he's 4 or 5 stars, you're good again, even if he drops after that. It's quite simple. It's on the first point of purchase that you buy in that bull. Now, if that bull was 4 or 5 star when you bought him, and then he dropped to 2 star, and somebody else buys him out of your herd and goes into your, he's not eligible in the next herd because when he went into the next herd, he was a 2 star. It's at the point of purchase.
Okay, excellent. That's cleared enough. Okay, keep going. Sorry, I interrupted.
Female replacement strategy. So 50% need to be 4 and 5 star by the 31st of October on the replacement index. This is very similar to BGP, but that rises up as we go on through, and it goes to 65% by October 25, and it moves to 75% by October 27. So that's genotyped 4 or 5 star in the herd, 75% of the reference number that you would have picked at the start. And females over 16 months are eligible there. That's an important one. We'll come back to that in our questions, because a lot of questions there around calving, less cows, can I make up the difference with heifers or whatever for my 4 or 5 star equivalent? Yes, heifers can be brought in there. Genotyping, this was 60% of BGP, it moves to 70%. So 70% of the yearly reference number that you pick, you'll pick it every January, 70%. So if you have 10 cows in your herd, you need to genotype 70% of them, 7 calves every year. So that's an important one too, because some guys, Jack, are thinking, I'm going to reduce cow numbers here. Well, then you still need to genotype. We'll say if you could reduce to 5 cows, but you still need to genotype 7. So you would need 2 ungenotyped animals in your herd to genotype them to go forward to be eligible for the scheme.
Okay, so you could buy in 2 calves and genotype.
You could, yeah. Once the warrant is part of the DNA registration program or something like that, that they're fine, and that can't be genotyped when you buy them in. So that's 100%. The next action genomic samples need to be returned by the 30th of November. In BDGP, there was a little leeway there. Maybe if genotype samples didn't go into December, possibly even January, it was okay. We got across the line. You got paid. But the department, from what I have seen at the meetings, they're going to be quite strict on deadlines in this one. So the 30th of November is the date to get genotype samples in. We expect to have them June, July this year. And the department have given undertaking that in our ACBF, in the future, in years coming down the road, that those tags will be out. Hopefully early in spring, that people might get tagging them before they go out. But for this year, we're just going to have to deal with it. They're going to come out in midsummer. The next one is weighing. So this weighing was in BEEP. Now it comes into SCEP. And this is an important one. 80% of eligible animals born in your holding cow-calf pairs need to be weighed every year to get your payment in this. A calf must be a minimum of 50 days old before it's eligible to be weighed. And you must submit the weight within seven days of weighing and no later than the 1st of November. In every year. So that's a really important one there. People are very familiar with weighing now, you know, putting it up in the system, putting it into ICBF, no issue there. Then there's action 5 is around the surveys. You know, you've got all the usual surveys around calf sire, calf and ease, birth size, you know, calf vigor, calf quality, calf facility, dam facility. All that information there is captured. That's a big part of the program. And that needs to be submitted by the 15th of February, 2024. So your annual data that happens in the year needs to be going by the 15th of February the following year. SCEP training, there'll be 2 courses will have to be attended to by applicants. That they need to be fully completed by the 15th of November in 2024. The 2 courses may be completed on one day or over different days. I would imagine a lot of farmers will just take the day maybe and go and do the 2 courses and get it done. Failure to attend courses by the 15th of November will result in removal from the program. Not just not getting your money now, removal from the program. So that's really, really important that you get that in there. And then the payment. And look, there's a lot of confusion around the payment, because the payment's actually an area based. We can't get support payments on a cow basis, because that could lead to, you know, maybe encouraging higher numbers or whatever. So this is an area based. It's an environmental program. So it's an area based payment. And it's calculated on the reference number of cows, which the department have calculated for you on the application process, divided by 1.5. That gives you an MPA, a maximum payable area. The first 15 hectares there are multiplied by 225. a hectare, and then after that it's 180 a hectare, and that works out into about 150 a cow for the first 22 cows and 120 a cow thereafter. But there's, we need to go through, there's a huge amount of questions in on that as regards payments and payments on cows and things like that. And other than that, like Jack, that's it in a nutshell. Look, there's lots of different specific questions, but that's the scheme.
Yeah. And Adam, on the face of it, again, from listening to it and listening to some of the queries, there's no huge hurdle, we'll say, there that are no new huge hurdle. Now, weighing could be a problem on a lot of farms, Adam, like in terms of they mightn't have the right facilities, that might, a lot of the cows and calves might be on out farms and that kind of thing, where there's no kind of bit of a yard or no bit of a crush, etc. Like, so that can be a big thing for some guys.
It can, Jack, but speaking to farmers out there, like they would have seen that that would be best scheme for weighing. It really went down well on farms, like in terms of, you know, hiring a scales from your local co-op. A lot of co-ops now, a lot of marts have scales in the yard, and whatever, €100 hires out the scales for the days. You'd weigh a lot of cattle if you went at it for a Saturday, if you'd help at home or whatever. And you know, it's really good information, and farmers would say that in terms of cow weight and in terms of calf weight, that they're really using that. And look at it, if it's getting you across the line for the payment as well, it's an important day's work.
Okay. We'll come back to it, because there's lots of questions around the whole stars piece and that kind of area again. Like, so we'll come back to that. Darren, if I was to go to you in terms of, I suppose, the timelines around this and kind of like the application process and when this kicks off, and just tune me up in terms of what kind of needs to happen now if I decide or I'm thinking of going into this new SCEP scheme.
Yep. So I suppose, Jack, the first thing is there's four eligibility requirements that people need to be fully cognizant of that have to be met every year of the programme. So the first one of those is you have to submit a basic income support for sustainability application, which is the BPS. Now, okay, every farmer, that's going to be a standard anyway. If you're in schemes, you're going to put in that. I know there's questions around inheritance farms, that sort of thing. We'll take those later on, but take the face value of this application has to be submitted. Next thing is that you have to be a participant in the Board B or Sustainable Lamb, Beef and Lamb Assurance Scheme. That has to be for the 5 years, and it has to be a fully, say, participation. You can't break, hop out for a year or two and come back in again. You have to calf a minimum of 50% of your reference number. That is, say, a change from the past. In the BDGP, you didn't have to actually calf any cows at all. But this time, you have to calf 50% of your reference number. Now, your reference number can change up and down, that we'll talk about in a second. And the last one then is that you have to commit to attending two training days. So that'll be a training day around the program, explain the program, and there'll be another training day that livestock handling will be a component of. Now, a lot of farmers have said at some of the meetings we've gone to, Jeannie, we know about livestock handling, need more training, but this is a requirement of two training days. That's what you have to meet. And
and if you don't have them, you get toughed out effectively. It's not a penalty, or there's not anything else. It's a tough out job.
Exactly. And it's important to be aware of that, because there is penalties, say, on what Adam talked about there, and we can touch on those later, depending on what's done. And look, there is others, I suppose, if there is a certain threshold not met, you can be turned out. But in essence, those four criteria, you're going into the scheme, you're signing up, knowing that they have to be adhered to. And that's something that is...
Excellent. And just 1 second on the training days, Darren, that came up again in Ennis, like in terms of and the department speaker at the time said they actually don't know who's going to do the training days yet. They've no plan or vision yet for where that is. Is that your understanding? Was that coming up the other meetings?
Yep. Yeah, so a tender will be put out by the Department of Agriculture. This is the way it has operated in the past, and any organisation can put in a tender for that. Now, I suppose any tender for public procurement, there'll be a lot of things that will be taken into account in how many advisors can deliver us, what sort of facilities are there, all that side of things. Okay. It won't be just who could do it for the lowest cost. It'll be, there is a whole, I suppose, maybe anything to do with public procurement of finances, there is a whole other tender there. Chagas did it for BDGP. I imagine they'd be interested in this. I imagine the ACA could be something they're looking at, or it could be some other body that is looking to get into this area.
Yeah, right. Okay. And the other question that came up around the training piece was, you know, you might have someone at home that's doing the kind of paperwork side of things, or maybe doing the little piece on the computers, etc., and that kind of thing. And maybe they'd go to the training day, and the herd owner or the herd keeper wouldn't go to it. Like, you know what I mean? In NSD, we're keen that the herd keeper, the herd owner has to go, you know, the kind of away, and the other person might go as well, but that the two of them would go rather than kind of one or the other.
Exactly. And this came up in Tuam as well. And as it stands at the moment, the herd owner has to go. So the only place I can see a small bit of leeway for coming on that is that maybe a herd keeper. And this was a question that came up in Tuam, and it was a genuine case where there was an elderly farmer who was the herd owner. The herd keeper was the person, say, that was doing some of the metrics of the scheme. And the herd keeper said that if it was a case the herd owner had to go, we wouldn't be able to participate. Peter Hart from the Department of Agriculture at the time said, look, we look at that at a later stage, but take it here and now. You can't just nominate anybody willy-nilly to go, that it has to be the herd owner. We may come back and revisit the herd keeper side of things.
Okay, excellent. Have you anything else for me now at this stage, Darren? The application process, talk me through there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the application process, it's online to agfood.ie. A farmer can go in and he can apply for themselves, or the agent that is approved to operate on his behalf can go in and put in an application. So there's a couple of things that is important here. So we're looking at a reference number, and the reference number is what you're going to be paid on throughout the program. The department have given flexibility in selecting that reference number. So you can select, say, the maximum 3 years of the number of cows that calved in your herd between 2016 and 2021. Now you can select any 3 years within that, say, number of years to align with the reference number that you want to pick. Now that will be known as the program reference number, and that will set the maximum, say, payment that you can get throughout the lifetime of the program. So it's important, I suppose, maybe to look at that. Why would you reduce down on the maximum number? Well, I suppose if, for example, you had 30 cows in 2016, 2017, and 2018, but had only 15 or 18 cows in 2019, 2020, or 2021, well, then you'd have to look at what's the best reference number, say, going forward for you. But in essence, I think a lot of farmers will be set the program reference number to close to top. Because if your maximum number, just say, for example, is 40, and you set the program reference number 30, the 30 is the maximum that you can go to over the next 5 years. So it's just important to be that. So that's the program reference number. And then there's the reference number. So I'm complicating things here, but the reference number or the 2020. So every year you'll have to set a reference number, and the reference number has to be within 20% of what you've set. So you can reduce down 20% each year from the program and say on your reference number. So if you had, just say, 40 cows as your program reference number, you could set your reference number at 38 cows at the start of 2023, and you have to set your reference number is what you'll be paid on at the start of every year. Now, again, why would the farmer reduce down that? It goes back on, say, this 50%, say, figure on calving down. So your payment, as I said at the start, you'll be paid if you calf down 50%. So if your reference number is 40 cows, technically you'll get paid if you calf down 20 cows, but just be careful, because if you lose a calf there and you only have 19, Jack, like don't be sailing too close to the wind.
You'll be
turfed out if you don't if you don't calf down, say, the 50% of cows. So just be careful on that. On the reference number, there's a good lot of questions coming in, and there's a bit of confusion there around, say, calving versus the reference number, and a lot of farmers thinking are we in the, say, the 80% of the reference number. We won't go into those, and now we'll take this at a later stage. But the only other point I'd make at this stage is just be careful around the 50%, say, capped figure, and also hit the targets that Adam said there around, say, the 75% 4 and 5 star animals by 2025, or having enough animals, say, to genotype. That if you have reduced down, say, your herd, and you're not buying in, just say, heifers, or you don't have other animals there, just be careful that you have enough animals to meet that, say, 70% of new animals, say, genotype, that type of stuff, because that will be based off the reference number that you put in. So there is slight differences on that there.
And just to clear up on this reference number, Darren, like, so there's you call it the program reference number first, and then I call it an annual reference number after that. So the program reference number is the one from the get-go, from the start, in terms of the maximum number.
Exactly. So your program reference number is based on the 3 years between 2016 and 2021. The maximum average of those is the maximum program number that you can put in, but you can reduce down that. There is mechanisms built into the department system. Just say your average is 16. If you put in 17, the program won't allow you to progress. If you put in your program number is 16 cows and you try and put in as your reference number 11 cows, for 2023, it won't allow you to progress either, because that 11 is more than 20% lower than your program. And some farmers are getting, there's a bit of confusion around this, in that farmers are thinking that that reference number has to be aligned to the 50% of cows calved. It doesn't. It's the number that you want payment to be based on, and it's the number that you want to be used as a reference number for Adam, say, pints there, is what he's talking about around genotype and around 4 and 5 stars. Like one of the examples that comes up, Jack, and it came up in June, it came up in another good lot of other meetings, is some pedigree breeder saying, I'm bringing in a lot of, say, new animals, imports, they don't start off with high star figures. I want to keep that side of my breeding aside, but I also have a commercial herd. And that's where that sort of example comes in, is that you can keep them separate there. Set your reference number to align to the animals that you want in the program.
Okay, so it's giving herd owners a bit of flexibility in that piece, which is good, Darren, isn't it? It's fair to say.
Like you have to say, Jack, that this is a good element of it. One of the supposed criticisms in the past to BDGP was you are tied into the number. This allows also farmers, say, to reduce down in this. And like, this is one of the things I'm getting back, is that some elderly farmers are saying, Ginny, I don't know what I'll be doing in 3 years' time, never mind 5 years' time. And look, there is, I suppose, maybe we can talk later about around force majeure if a farmer can't calf cows anymore because of health reasons, that type of thing.
Okay.
But this allows you to plan for, say, a reduction in your herd without getting penalised.
Excellent. Okay. Just give me a timelines piece, Darren, on this, just at the top of the show here now, so that we can get this.
So the applications have to be in by the 22nd of May. So that is when all applications have to be in. I know Andrew will talk a bit around, say, the Board B requirement. There is a bit of confusion there, in that initially you were seeing that you had to be a participant, or you had to be a member of the Board B, a sustainable lamb and a beef lamb assurance scheme by the time that your application was going in. That is now not the case. It's the 16th of October, 2023.
Yeah. Adam, just on that one, on the timeline that Darren talks about there, the 22nd of May, do you see that being a problem?
I don't, Jack. I think, look, the applications are flooding in there at the moment, and look, it's well out there, you know, it's in, everybody's talking about it. I don't see an issue with getting in before the 22nd of May.
Okay, back to you in a minute, Adam. Andrew Mahon, just to come to you in terms of the Board B piece, because this came up a lot in Ennis the other night at the meeting. I mean, I suppose there was a lot of suckler and weanling farmers there in Ennis, and they felt like, I haven't been a member of this Board B quality assurance before because I wasn't getting any merit, I wasn't getting any benefit of it, etc., and that kind of thing. I mean, before we get into the detail, Andrew, maybe just for those that are not familiar with quality assurance piece, might tell us kind of what it is, what it's about, and what's the kind of overall intention with kind of something like this.
Yeah, thanks, Jack, and thanks for having us on today, just to explain, maybe, because I think there's probably a lot of fear out there with suckler farmers around joining the SBLAS scheme, and a lot of it, I would say, is probably unnecessary. If you look at the overall numbers, we've over 54,000 members in the scheme at the moment. The not eligible rate in those audits is less than 1%. So, you know, although there's a lot of rumours and kind of fear-mongering maybe out there about what happens in the audit, for the vast majority of farmers that pass through the audit without much issue. I think some of it is maybe a legacy from the old BLCAS standard, where there was no closeout if there was issues raised on the farm on the day of the audit. So the analogy I use nearly is like it's nearly like an NCT now, where your farm's going through a bit of a check. We'll let you know what issues are there, and you have an opportunity following the audit to close those out. And you've 28 days typically to close out non-conformances post audit. Overall, just in terms of like if farmers have particular queries or concerns around the scheme, there is a help desk available that's operated by FRS. So without getting into the kind of the nuts and bolts of the different requirements within the scheme, you know, a lot of the fear is around the paperwork required. And a lot of that is actually a reflection of what farmers are required to keep anyway. So if you were doing a cross compliance inspection, same records that Borbia require for the audit are what the department would require in a cross compliance inspection. So again, what I would say to guys is, isn't it better that someone is coming in, an independent pair of eyes, and kind of giving you a health check on how your record keeping and stuff is going, rather than that becoming an issue at a department inspection? So that would be kind of, if I was to give you the very short answer, that's where I'd
Yeah. And I suppose, Andrew, like in terms of kind of, stepping back again from the detail, but in the markets and what it means for Borbia to have a cohort of quality assured farmers, like, I mean, are your customers looking for it? Is there a market requirement, I suppose, to be quality assured, or where is that piece?
Yeah, no, look, it's obviously a hugely important element of trying to get Irish produce marketed abroad. Like, you can't just go out and tell a good story. You have to be able to verify the proof points around that. And really, that's where the strength of the quality assurance audit really kicks in. You know, the likes of the grass-fed claims and stuff that the industry want to make, they have to be verified. You can't just say it. You have to prove that that's what the industry is based off. And again, that is what's building through the audits. And in terms of how they're all calculated, I suppose, like, we do work very closely with Chagas. It's a Chagas model, basically, that's used for the carbon footprint, etc. So again, it all kind of goes back to this narrative that, you know, that agriculture has to prove its credentials and has to be shown that, you know, the moves that have been made are been positive and that farmers are reacting to the market requirements. And again, I suppose the mechanism for showing that is through the quality assurance program from our perspective.
Okay. The other question that kind of kept coming up in Ennis the other night was this whole piece around, I'll sign up today in 2023 and in 2024 or 2025, the Borbia piece will tighten up and all of a sudden I'll have a lot more work to do, or my farm won't look great in terms of a carbon footprint or all this kind of piece. And in terms of the change piece that's going to happen, and we know there is some change going on in the background in terms of, you know, a new piece around the carbon and the emissions, Andrew, but is there going to be big changes, we'll say, from when a person signs up now in 2023 for the next number of years, or what would you say on that one?
Yeah, look, obviously over a 5-year period, there could be changes in the standard, and you know, there is conversations happening at the moment about trying to align all the Borbia schemes. You know, in relation to the kind of concerns that people have around the sweeping changes piece, that's not what is going to happen. The conversation that we're having at the moment, say with ICBF and Chagas, is actually about how we cooperate more, that we can recognise the work the farmers are doing in different programmes that might be signed up, be it with Chagas or whatever. So ultimately, what we want to do as an industry is move together to show and prove the credentials of Irish farmers without asking farmers to do more than they're already doing. And similarly, like the requirements of the scheme, you know, we all refer to it as a Borbia standard, but the way I'd actually present it is it's actually an Irish industry standard. The way those schemes are developed are in collaboration with our farm orgs, with the Department of Ag, with the Food Safety Authority. You know, so it's not someone in Borbia just making up rules and regulations. It's actually reflective of what's in the legislation and the programs the farmers are doing anyway. So again, you know, there may be change, but I wouldn't say they're going to be sweeping changes, and all of those will be, you know, kind of industry agreed as we move through the process. So it's not just a case of Borbia will take the script, rip it up and present farmers with new challenges and hurdles. That's not the case. Actually, what we're trying to do is make it simpler in a lot of ways.
Okay, excellent. Right, we take it at that. I leave it at that, Andrew, and I'll come back. There's a couple of questions here in the Q&A, and I'll shoot them to you when I come across them here. And again, folks, I'm just reading these out. Effectively, they've come in since our shout out last week, and I think it's no harm just to go actually ask the question and go through the answer as best we can. And obviously, I mean, you're going to get your own professional advice, I suppose, in terms of your advisor, your consultant, your agent that's looking after you. But we'll obviously do our best here to answer the questions that we have that have come in. Darren, if I start with you, the first one here that I'm looking at, I have 40 cows and I've done for the past number of years. plan to reduce slightly over the coming years. Can I go into the scheme with my 40 cow reference for this year and get paid for less cows as I reduce numbers in the years to come? Or do I need to select my reduced number of cows at the start? Talk to me.
Yep. No, Jack, he can go in and say, sounded by that, if he was has reduced down slightly. I just used the example that he might be down at 30 cows now. He can go in with his reference number of say, 40, because he's calving at least 50% of his reference number. And if he went down, just say, underneath, if he plans to go underneath that, say, 20 cows in the years to come, well, he can reduce down 20% each year in his reference, in the reference number he selects at the start of the year.
Okay. And a variation on that, I've heard it at some of the meetings, is if it was hectares, you know, so let's say he has 20, let's use the same numbers. I have 40 hectares. I plan to, let's say he's losing a bit of a lease or he's losing a bit of rented land or whatever. And so the number is, the sliding scale is coming down in terms of the hectares. So obviously that influences yep. his piece, does it? And what changes there?
Yeah, definitely, Jack. So I'm just getting the calculator out here as we're talking. Yeah. Essentially, on the land type, so your reference number, say we know this is you're divided by, say, one, so 40 hectares there divided by 1.5 because yeah. it's 1.5, say, cows per hectare. So he's paid maximum payable area, or MPA is what it's known, is 26.67 hectares. Okay. Under the program, he has to maintain 80% of that ground. Okay. So he has to maintain, say, 80% of that. If he knows that he's gone, so 80% of that, say, 26.6 is 21 hectares. So right. if he knows that he is going to fall down, just say, for example, to 18 hectares, yeah. well, then he reduces down his reference number to make sure that he is aligned to that. And that can be... That could be over the course of the next few years if he knows that he's, just say, for example, he is a lease and he knows yeah. that it's not going to be renewed in 3 years' time. He can plan now for that. He can avail of the higher payments for now as long as, say, he adheres to that 80% yeah. of maximum okay. payable area.
Okay. Okay. Adam, are you concurring with all that what Darren says on both examples, the cows and the hectares piece? That's all stacking up for you, like, yeah?
Yeah, that's it. I guess we'll come to it later on, but there's a wee caveat in terms of reducing your cow numbers in terms of having enough to hit the 4 and 5 star requirement by year 5 mm-hmm. and to have enough to mm-hmm. genotype and that every year. Okay. But yeah, that's
okay. Next question. Adam, take this one. I'm a new entrant to suckling in 2023. So this year, I want to get to 15 cows, but for financial reasons, I only plan to go to 8 or 10 this year. Is there any leeway for new entrants building numbers? I am not a young trained farmer.
I'll read out the line in the terms and conditions of this in terms of on the scheme document. Applicants with no data for the years 2016 to 2020 inclusive will be regarded as new entrants and will declare the program and yearly reference number at application stage. And the same applies for suckler farmers who commence operations in 22 or 2023. So they will put in the number where they think they will get to in I suppose year one or whatever, and they'll need to abide by that then for year one. So for new entrants, there is a bit of leeway there to put in. So if you'd no cows at all, or if you'd only a very small number of cows, the department have said the important one with this is, and we've got a lot of questions in on this, the important one, if you're querying a reference number, get the application in and then query the reference number after. There'll be a beef schemes division email that you can draft and send an email to them and send your play your case basically. But there's no point doing that without applying, you know, because the department can't do anything after the 22nd of May. Get the application in and then we can talk about where your reference
okay. is. Now, this person, he or she, I don't know, is he reckons that they get to 10 cows this year, you know, but they're aiming for 15. So what would you put in?
I'd chance it in at 15, but I'd say you'd be better get closer to that number of calving. I don't know, it's down to comment that, but you'd be better. They'll get it hard to pay you for more. They won't pay you for more cows than you don't calve in the first year okay. of the program. So I'd say it's the number that you will calve in this year as regards where your reference number will be.
Okay.
Jack, a very similar one to that. Say that's coming up in this. Just say, for example, if you had cows in recent years, and just say for argument's sake, going back say to 2019, you had 5, 2020, you had 7, 2021, you had 9, but then in 2022, you jumped up say to 40 cows and your average is low. that the department will look at that in a favourable light, in contrast to you only having just say 8888 and then looking to go to 40 cows next year. Like that, that's
there's a vision that is slowly building all the time. Like,
And it's also based on say where you are now, that, that you can't go to this aspiration, you can't take a massive jump to an aspirational figure, but they will take into account what's there at the moment on your farm.
Okay, excellent. Andrew, this one for you. How long does it take to get quality assured?
How long is a piece of string, Jack? Essentially, the reality of that is once a farmer registers with us, you know, we'll get an audit created straight away. We'll assign an auditor to that person. Okay. The auditor will make contact to schedule a date and time for the audit. Assuming that goes ahead and any issues that occur on farm that need to be closed out, there's a 28-day window for that to happen. And then what I would be saying is you need to leave us a fortnight post the closeout for us to do any review and returns and clarifications. So I'd say it's a 6 weeks window, but the vast majority of audits will go through with very few non-conformance, if any, and those could be closed relatively quickly. So it kind of depends on how quickly the farmer wants to action closeout. If he can do it relatively quickly, get it done within 2 weeks, you know, he would be certified within a month. And I suppose that would be the call out here from Borbia in terms of farmers now, is to take action. Don't be waiting off to do your Borbia audit until, you know, the last minute, because there is that lag between the day you're audited and getting certified. And, you know, so kind of take the action now. It will be at a date and time that suits you. So the auditor will make contact. And once we have your name in the books and there's time to get it done, we will get it done.
And Adam, I think you mentioned it at the top of the show in terms of November or October that they have to be quality assured by?
Darren, the 16th of October, I think, is the last date, isn't it, Andrew? I think it's the 16th of October.
Grand. Okay, because so the deadline for the applications is the 22nd of May, but if you're not quality assured at that point, that's fine, as long as it's done by the middle of October.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Nice one. Now, next question. Can I buy cows with calf at foot, or do I need to buy in calf heifers to qualify? Oh, actually, apologies. This is part of the new entrant one. So this was the piece where he was going to 10 cows. He was going to 15 cows. He was going to get to 10 in 2023. And so his question is here, then, can I buy cows with a calf at foot, or do I need to buy in calf heifers to qualify? I have 6 calved so far this year and was thinking of buying the rest of cows if it would work. So talk to me.
Because this is capturing data, calving time and calving ease and calving difficulty, a lot of that survey data is important. So you can't buy in cows and calves. It needs to be an in-calf heifer that person buys in, and then they calve them down before the 30th of June to be in. That's another important one. Like, it's not calendar year here. Year one of the scheme started on the 1st of July 2022. It finishes on the 30th of June 2023. So those having calf heifers have to calve before the 30th of June to be eligible for year one payment.
Yeah, wow. So if you were going to a farm, here we are now the end of March, and you were looking at these buying these heifers and there no signs of softening or anything like that. I mean, they have to calve before to be any good to this particular farm, they have to calve before the end of June.
Yeah, right? Before the end of June, in calf heifers in and calve in your herd before the 30th of June. Yeah.
Okay, nice one. We touched off this one in our discussions, but I'll ask it anyway. I have a small commercial herd and a few pedigree cows as well. The pedigree cows are not going to hit the star targets. Can I select lower reference number to leave out the pedigree cows and claim on the commercial cows only? Adam, take me through.
Yeah, you can. And I think this can help in tune with Darren, but he can add in there in terms of the answer. But my understanding is that you can reduce your reference number to take account of those pedigree cows. So you have a lower, we'll say, criteria then to hit 4 and 5 stars. So it takes the pedigree cows out of the equation, and you can drive on with the scheme with the commercial cows. But just be wary of the payment being less than, of course, when you're reducing your reference number, the payment is going to reduce.
So, Darren, am I right? Let's say that I calved 40, right? And 10 of them were pedigree that effectively I'm kind of discounting or leaving to the side. So there's 30 commercial cows there. For my annual reference number, can I use that 30 number as the payment option, or am I using the 40? What just talk to me.
You can, Jack, but I think there's another element of say why pedigree farmers are looking at that, and it's around say the targets for the 4 and 5 star say bulls that you have to build up to 90% of them being 4 or 5 star sires, because some of them are saying they want to have access to using new sires. And say the 4 and 5 star heifer targets, rather than farmers say wanting to change their reference number, I think that's where it's coming in. But yes, no, you can reduce down your reference number to take account of that. So,
okay, Darren, take this one, Darren. I farm with my father and mother. We hope to enter a partnership in the next 2 years once I finish college. Can my father enter SCEP now? And if I join the herd number in 2 years' time, will it be seen, or will it be seen as a separate business? So thinking of going into a partnership and want to enter SCEP, but wondering will it mean changes? Talk to me, Darren, on the partnership job.
Yeah, no, it shouldn't mean any changes, Jack, because you're still continuing with the core, say, business. That's as long as he joins a partnership, farmers, yep, say, system stays the same. Yep. There should be no issue there. Just on that, say, registered farm partnership, you just want to, I suppose, maybe look at the where you are. If he's bringing in extra land into that type of thing, it shouldn't make any, say, odds. It should, but just be careful on that, say, the figures that you have are adhered to and everything stacks up, but there should be no issues. So there shouldn't.
Correct. Okay, you're going to sign up to the terms and conditions as well when you join up as the partner. That's fine. Adam, I have a quota at the moment for 60 cows. How many cows do I have to keep during the lifetime of the scheme to qualify for the full payment? Will 30 calf cows suffice, as the requirement is for 50% calved? And will I therefore only have to genotype 70% of 30? Also, is it possible that 30 heifers, 5-star, could make up the balance of the cows if necessary? I would appreciate clarification to these queries. Thanks, PJ. Now, let me take it easy now. Just there's a couple of questions in this from PJ. I have a quota at the moment for 60. Now, where he's getting these quota? Is he taking that as his annual reference number? For 60 that, cows. Okay.
Yes,
how many cows do I have to keep during the lifetime of the scheme to qualify for the full payment?
So 30 cows a calf each year. Now, as Darren says, he's on the line at 30. I'd be happier there, 32, 33, 34. But anyway, 30 cows is 50% of that. Yep.
Okay, that's fine. And will I therefore only have to genotype 70% of the 30, or the 32 or 3, as you say?
No, he has to genotype 70% of the 60 if he keeps that as his MPA. If he wants to get paid on the 60, he needs to genotype 70% of that 60. Yeah,
of the 60. Wow. Okay, yep. Exactly right. So that's 42. 70% of 60, yes. 42, I'd say, like, so that's what he has to genotype.
So Jack, you see there, if he only calves 32 and he needs to genotype 42, he needs to pull in another 10 heifers there from somewhere, or 10, they could be calves, they could be weanlings, they could be anything. Once they haven't been genotyped before they went to his herd his herd, he needs to do that. Yeah.
Okay, nice one. Also, is it possible that 30 heifers, 5-star, could make up the balance of the cows if necessary?
That goes back to the original question of the 60 and the 30. He doesn't need to make up that 60. He can calve just 30 cows and get away there. He doesn't need the 30 heifers to make up the balance or whatever. Now, in terms of genotyping, he does need to bring in an extra 10 there to genotype somewhere along the way. Yep.
Okay. Andrew, coming back to you, is QA an online application?
Yeah, there is an online version of it available, Jack. And but what I would suggest the guys is the quickest way is actually to call either AgriData or the FRS help desk. And I can send across those numbers if you can put them up.
It'd be good. We'll try and get it up on screen. So for the FRS and the AgriData piece, that'd be great. Andrew, excellent. Okay, next question. Adam, if your reference number is 20, does this mean that you will have to have 20 suckler cows on the final day of the scheme in 2023? Or is it 10 calf sucklers with eligible calves and the other 10 could be in calf heifers from Joe? Joe's question. Yeah.
Doesn't need 20. Can calve 10 cows for the duration of the program and still get paid on the 20 cows. Doesn't need to buy an in-calf heifers rotten to make that up. He just needs to he needs to make up the difference for the genotype, and I suppose the 70% of the 20 needs to be genotyped.
Yeah. Stay with me on this one. Year one of SCEP runs from July 22 to June 23. So with autumn 22 born calves, so they're born August, September, October last year, when can weight recording begin for cow-calf pairs?
In the past, right, for BeatBess, we'll say when it was announced, and Wayne was a part of it as part of that, record the weights and then input them on the system the minute you can. That was the line we got from the department the last time, and I would imagine it'll be the same line this time, I guess, for autumn born calves. They're going out now, you know, and maybe being weaned at this stage in terms of maybe last August, September calves. So get the weights, record them, and get them in on the system, apply, and then get them in on the system as soon as you can. Yeah.
That was the answer I was hearing in Innes the other night as well, exactly on that one. Here we go, Andrew, again, just coming back to you. This is someone now that doesn't believe in Board B by the looks of this. I have heard getting farmers is just a clever ploy to get carbon data on farms and it will come back to bite us. Any truth in this? Andrew, talk to me. This is from Michael. Michael is looking around the corner here, and he says you're only after his carbon data.
Well, it's not me that's after it. Actually, it's the Department of Agriculture are including the Board B requirement as part of this. Carbon footprint is an important element. It is an environmental scheme at the end of the day, and that's part of what is going to be reported on. But in terms of the Board B requirement, we're aware that carbon can fluctuate on a farm depending on the size of the herd. There might be reductions or increases, but there's nothing in the Board B scheme that penalizes a farmer if his carbon footprint goes the wrong way, for example. Mm. So there's no penalty there, but it is about measuring. And look, farmers have to take it upon themselves to drive improvement at farm level, but it's not there that Board B are telling you have to reduce it by X amount a year. That's not the case at all.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. Next one. My query is minor in nature, I'm sure, compared to the others you will receive, but I just wanted to ask, would the reference years work for a farmer who has just this year moved into the suckling game, which I will be continuing with to complement my main enterprise of dairy calf to beef? So, Adam, this is our new entrant person again, yeah?
Yeah, so back again there, look at it. It's for a new entrant that didn't calve cows between 16 and 20. You can put in where you think you're going to be for the first year of the program, and that'll be taken account of. Yeah.
Okay, Siobhan.
Just check for one second.
Yeah, go on.
Just on the weighing one, I didn't come in on it there a second ago.
Oh yeah, this is the autumn calving.
Exactly, because I just wanted to log in here to ICBF myself. So when you go in, because it's a query I got last night, and say normally farmers might have gone into services tab and top and click on beef data and genomics program and then clicked on weighing. But if you go into say record events and live weight on that, you'll be able to record weights there. Or also if you can't say record them, or you're having issues recording them, or in the past you've say contacted ICBF and you've got the say sheet out, a weight recording sheet out, what I would say is record the weights now anyway, because in the past, say, there has been leeway up to a date in May where you can record dates, say, weights retrospectively, and then the 7 days kick in there. So, as Adam said, the main thing is to get the weights now, or in particular, when your animals have been sold, because a marked weight won't do. So, it's a date before that.
Okay, nice one. Clarification on that. These ones are from Siobhan here now. What if your cow numbers are reduced now compared to reference years? Adam, we had that before. Will we be weaning, vaccinating, taking cow poo samples as previous scheme? Can 4 or 5-star heifers be used to meet targets? Right. So now, three questions.
Cow numbers reduced. Yeah, we can reduce back to 50%. We've had that one. Issue there. Weed and vaccinating, we expect those to be part of the BEEP scheme that's going to be announced in the next 3 weeks. And that's a 28 million scheme. So upwards.
But they're not part of
Not part of SCEP, will be part of that other scheme. And can 4 or 5-star heifers be used to meet targets? Yes. If an animal is over 16 months and genotyped at that date, which is the 31st of October each year, they will suffice for that 4 and 5-star target.
Okay. Hi, Adam. I'm down on cow numbers this year and looking to buy a few calved heifers and cows at the mart. Will I get any money on these animals this year, or will it be next year when they calve down in my herd before they qualify?
So if you go up and down, there's a bit of confusion here around, like, if I drive up cow numbers, will I get paid on the higher number? It all goes back to the reference period, you see, back during, between the year 16 and 21. You can't really change things now. So it doesn't really matter how many cows that person calves during 2023. It'll go back to what was calved previous in their herd, and that's the payable area. So going up or down now.
If they weren't reaching the 50% calved of the numbers that they had in 16 to 20,
in that case they would need to go out and buy in calf heifers and calve them down before the 30th of June sure that they hit that 50% requirement in year one.
I have a question about the skip. I calve cows normally in July and August. However, last year I calved 10 heifers early. They calved down between the 1st of June 22 and the end of June, ahead of the main calving group in July and August. My understanding is the skip year started on the 1st of July. to 30 to June 23, that's correct, for year one and so on. Does this mean the 10 heifers I calved outside of year one won't be eligible for skip? Take that part of that first. Who's going to take that?
Go ahead, Darren.
I suppose, say what you have to be just careful on here is to say that those, if those, say, animals calf within the year, and they calf before the 30th of June, say this year they're sound because they're still in it, but I'm just taking this, that his heifers are calved earlier and they're probably going to calf in August, where I suppose the question mark comes in. He's probably going to be okay on his 50% calf number within the year, because if he's bringing in, just say, 10 heifers, we're taking that he might have 40 cows, for example. So his 50% calf figure might be okay. Where he might get caught, Jack, is on the 80% weight recording. So recording 80% of the cow-calf weight pairs, and that's for animals born within that year. So that's just, okay. I suppose, where if he wants to bring us or give us a bit more information or follow up after hearing this or give us a call, we can tease that one out with him. But we need probably to know just a bit more information around how many cow numbers he has at the beginning. But that's just something to be cognizant of, is that the 80% could catch him on that. Maybe, Adam, just something you want to add on that.
No, it's exactly that, Darren. I suppose if those heifers calve again in June, they're fine or whatever, that's in year one. But you need to watch that 80%, that they're hitting 80% of that reference number.
They calve just outside the start of the scheme, but they should be, if they're good suckler cows, they should be calving before, they should be back calving again at this stage. And he continues, I meet all the other criteria as regard S-blast, 4 or 5 stars, as I knew there was a sucker scheme coming up, and I put myself in a position to make maximum uses, or so I thought. As you say, the reference number maybe is what we're missing. We might come back to it on that. Hi Adam, thanks for regular although I read the IFJA cover to cover all three sections, it is great to get a weekly update. I went back into suckers, swim against the tide in brackets, last year, starting with 5 pedigree Angus heifers calving down. I will be calving 14 this year and wonder if I can make a special case to the department, as I was not in sucklers other than one reference year, which was startup year. I would be delighted. I've heard more about new entrants into sucklers this morning than I have over the last year.
So, get the application in and make your case in the department. Look, I'm only after getting in here, I'm calving 14. Yeah. That's proof, you know, to aspirationally say I'm going to go up to 50 cows in the next 2 years. You're going to need proof that they're in your herd and the calving has taken place this year, I suppose, in terms of, you know, and that person will have that if they're 14 in there.
Yeah. Andrew, you've answered this one already. How long will it take to get into the quality assurance scheme? So that piece, like it could take up to 6 weeks. It depends on the interaction really between the farmer and the auditor. But
again, the call on it, Jack, is just to sign up now, take the action. Like the auditor will ring you, you know, and you can be gathering all your information, getting your records together in the meantime, because what you don't want to do is stall on this. And then run it too close to the deadline to get it over the line.
Yeah, excellent.
Andrew, this was asked at one of the meetings during the evening. How far would you want to go back on records, say, to have a good retrospective sample for the orders are coming?
So for a new entrant coming in, it's 6 months records is what required. And a lot of guys signing up today, you know, they'll have those records available anyway. Go down to your vet and ask them for a printout of your remedy purchases, you know. And another thing, just in terms of records, to be very clear on it, you know, lots of people think you have to put it into what's called the Borbia book. That's not the case. If you're keeping your records in a diary, as long as it's hitting all the requirements that's in the standards, or, you know, the dates and the product used and all the bits and pieces that are required, that's a perfectly acceptable way of keeping a record. And so is using, you know, the kind of likes of the farm management apps and stuff. I'm not going to name out any particular ones, but, you know, they're all things that we see during the audit, and they're all acceptable ways of keeping records. You know, there's no right or wrong way to keep it. It doesn't have to be in the Borbia book specifically.
Okay, nice one. Here are some questions for TikTok on Skep. I think I know the answers, but I'm wishful for a different answer. Okay. My stock bull is currently 3-star terminal. He was BDGP eligible and genotyped when I bought him in December 2018. I'm very happy with him, with how he was breeding. Will he be eligible stroke qualify as he was 4 or 5 star when bought, or will it go by his star rating now at start of the scheme? So, Adam, talk to me on that.
Yeah, very simple answer there. If he was BDGP eligible, he's eligible for SCEP. Even though he dropped down, once he was genotyped when he came into the herd, which he obviously was when he's been BDGP eligible, he's okay. He's fine.
Okay. Nice one. Will calves, this is Kevin's second part of this question, will calves born the 1st of July 2022 and were weighed and weight submitted to ICBF before I joined SCEP, or it even open for applications, be eligible for SCEP provided they were over 50 days old at the time of weighing, or will they have to be weighed again after I join SCEP?
I haven't come across that one. I don't know, Darren, is the department say something on that, but yeah.
I presume, Jack, that they'll be sound because it's a weight record of the cow and calf. As long as the cow and calf was weighed on the same day, the weight was recorded. I cannot see an issue with that. We will get that clarified, but that's something I can't. I find it hard to see how there would be an issue.
How they're going, the last question, part of question from Kevin on that one is, if I only keep half the cows, will I get the full amount of money or half the amount of money?
Full amount.
Adam, stay with me. Why is this new scheme similar to the old scheme in that it is area-based and will dilute the payments per cow to highly stocked suckler farms? Could you also define forage area? Is it grassland only, or could other crops be included like maize, fodder beet, or barley grown for home consumption? Pauric sends this in. So talk to me about the area-based
payment. Yeah, so the area-based is because it's an environmental payment as well. We can't attach supports to cows, so it's an environmental suckler carbon efficiency program, and the divided by the 1.5 gives you the area then that you're going to get paid on. That's just the way the scheme. We wouldn't have got this scheme, or the Department of Agriculture wouldn't have got this scheme through Brussels if we go with it on a per cow basis. So it's attached to an area, and that's the way the payment comes. As regards forage area, it's divided by 1.5, so it's 1.5 Leicester units to the hectare, or cows to the hectare that you're paid on. Defining forage area, Darren just had this before actually. Maize, fodder beet is okay, I think, as a forage crop. Darren can correct me here, but barley isn't. So even if the barley is grown for home consumption, that's not a forage, so it's not in on the area for that.
Okay, even if you made whole crop silage of it.
So if you made arable silage off of Jack and had grass underneath it, you're okay. So just say for that. So alfalfa, arable silage, clover, fodder beet, forage rape, grass, say multi-species sward, reliquar scheme. There's a variation multi-species swards. Then there is kale, low input permanent pasture, lucerne, lupins, maize, mangolds, permanent pasture, red clover, reed, canary grass, sugar beets, reeds, traditional hay meadows, and spring triticale and turnips. Spring and winter triticale.
There's lots of forage. Okay. Okay, next one. I have a reference number of 24. Minus 20% is 19.2. Will 19 cows be sufficient this year? And if not, will a cow that calved this year but whose calf later died be allowed so as to make the number up to 20?
This is the biggest, say, area confusion we're getting, Jack, in that he doesn't have to have that, say, number of cows, say, that once he's calving down to 50%. So,
But is he thinking of the 80%? What was the 80% target? The 80% of what?
It's the 80% of the number of cows calved in the herd. This is one of the biggest areas we're getting, say, that a bit of confusion around the reference numbers. That if that 19.2 would be important if he was only calving 9 cows, because he wouldn't be meeting the 20% he would have gone down wouldn't be enough to have the 50% to that 19.2.
Okay.
Am I making sense on that?
Yeah, no, that's fine. 100%. Loud and clear. I have a bull who was a 4-star replacement for the BDGP scheme. He's now a 2-star. Will he qualify under the new scheme?
Yeah.
Job done. End of story. Andrew, what if the quality assurance scheme gets harder in the future? Can I get out without penalty? Getting out of the skip now is what I presume that
Yeah, my understanding is if he withdraws from the Borbia scheme, he's out of the scheme, and any money he's been paid has to be recouped. So, you know, if you're signing up for 5 years, you are committing to Borbia certified for that period.
Darren, Adam, that's what you, that's your understanding as well. Perfect. TB has ruined. TB has ruined numbers on me for the last number of years. So my average will be much lower than what it should be. This average, I presume, here means the reference number. He or she means the reference number. What can I do? So TB, so obviously this person has lost cows, you know, with TB or whatever, and it can be in an area for a long time. What can I do?
So came up with the meeting, say, put in your application, put a case for, say, increasing your reference number. Likewise, the question has also came up in the meeting that, what if TB has taken your cows and you can't hit that, say, the 50% reference numbers or whatever, all that'll be a force majeure case. So you will be covered on that. But say on the first one, on the reference number, put in an application to have your reference number increased.
Okay. Summer calver. I think this is similar to what we had in summer calver, May to July, and this scheme ends in June. So am I being penalized for summer calving? Why couldn't a participant pick a time frame to suit the farm? So why were these timelines established 1st of June to the kind of, I call it the first, what's the kind of background?
I suppose it's taken in autumn calves, would say, for year one there, you know, like for 2022, it's taken in. So BDGP ended sort of last year, and then this year is making sure that the autumn calves for last year are taken into account for 2023 onwards. I don't think anybody's really penalized, because it goes back to the reference number, you know, like people think we're going back there, we're getting falling into that trap of the number of cows that you calve is the number of cows you get paid on. It's not. It's actually the reference number that you get paid on. This happened way back a couple of years ago. So it's and as regards hitting targets, it might be important, but as I think everybody will work out okay on that.
Yeah. The only place where that man could be caught if he's calving in an incredibly tight sort of 6 week window, and there's fluctuation from year to year, say around the start or the end, is just what way figures say go, but in general it shouldn't. But if there was, say, significant fluctuation from one year to another, and it was a very tight calving window, normally it would probably balance out over. But he has a pint. I heard that question actually come up, Jack, and the department sort of said, look, they had to pick a pint in time. Unfortunately, there might be a couple of people that may have to tweak their system slightly, or that may have to watch it a bit closer, it's a consequence of it.
Yeah. Adam, this is your fault, so I'll give you this question. Is it paid on cow numbers or land area? So you put this in the front of the journal, obviously, the suckler cows were getting €200 a cow, I suppose. Like, so just talk to me on that, in terms of, like, the question came in here, is it paid on cow numbers or land area? Simple question.
Yeah, look, it's paid on land area, but it depends on the cow numbers that you have during the reference period as to how when that's divided by 1.5. So it's still going back to cow numbers, I suppose, but it's actually, it's based on an area-based payment is the answer, yeah.
Okay, and you're sorry, your piece on the kind of that you had €200 a cow, like,
so I'm just, yeah, kind of, I'm, yeah, yeah, I'm dividing that, it out. I'm dividing that area out by the number of cows that's in those herds. So it's 150 for the first 22, and then it's 120 for after that, and then I'm adding on the beef best onto that as well, which will be up 60, 70, 80 euros, whatever it is.
So you know about that before anyone else did the beef scheme. You obviously have a...
There's 28 million there, and if we divide it out by the number of cows that were in BGP whatever, it's a calculator. See,
make it up as you go along. Like, I hear you. Like, Adam, I have 50 sucklers in the new scheme. Can I keep 25 cows in calf and 25 cows to fatten and draw down the payments on 50?
Yeah, doesn't need the 25 cows to fatten at all. They can be fattened in the morning. Again, go back to Darren's point, 25 is tight, go 26, 27, 28 or whatever. Yeah.
But also, Jack, the area that's going to catch that man is probably the 25 cows if he's buying in suckler cows, given that there's an increase in number of the national herd genotyped. Just watch the 70%.
Figure.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
So if he buys genotyping, he mightn't be able to get cows for genotyping. Is that the animals for genotyping?
Exactly.
No, he could buy. They could be dairy calves, but from the dairy herd that he could genotype there, to meet a 70% genotype. And once they weren't,
But is that not going to become tighter, guys, as this kind of national genotype piece rolls out? You know, I mean, is that not fair to say that, like, there'll be less and less animals ungenotyped, you know, to an extent?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I suppose it depends on the uptake of that voluntary scheme.
Okay. Nice.
So just be cognizant of that.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. Yeah. Right. Here, it's a long one, but looks from my reading, I'm in a bit of bother, but maybe you can clear it up. So this farmer isn't hopeful. So hopefully we can. Right. I'm an autumn calving herd now completely. Had to get rid of 15 cows last year as bull stock working. So I replaced some of them and they calved in June 22. So they were in on the beef scheme. Have reference number of 47 on 33 acres. He's in acres. The scheme acres. So sorry, just I had a reference number of 47. So that's the cow numbers I'm saying on 33 hectares. He's joined acre scheme with 2 hectares of wild bird cover and 10 acres of low input meadow. Can I maintain 47 or will I have to reduce? So that's the first question. Can I maintain 47? Or so he's 33 hectares, so 47 cows, right?
I'm taking it that the question is that he's worried about that the 2 hectares and the 10 hectares are eligible. Yes. All forage area, all eligible. So he's not affecting. It's not affecting. He's 80% maximum payable area. He's okay in that.
So his 33 is divided by the 1.5. Is that right, Darren? To get his
exactly. Right. Yeah. So okay. It makes no odds that it's still classified as sort of it's still classified forage area. The purposes of this.
Okay. Reference number is 47 cows. Okay. 28. I have 28 with 4 or 5 stars. They include 2 females, 1 born on March 20th and December. Okay. 20 with 3 stars, with greater than 3 stars, including 1 female. 44 cows have calved in the herd at the moment. Currently 4 cows in herd calved last June with dead and missing cows etc. from last year. There's 38 cows registered with calves from the, so 38 cows registered with calves from the 1st of July, 2022 and have calves still with them. No more calves to be born till August 23. Where does this leave me with the 80% of calves to be weighed per cow versus the reference number? Okay, so he's 38 out of, I think 47 was his reference number. Yeah.
So the 38 is the important figure there. It's there was a bit of confusion of this in the start that people thought I have to weigh the number of animals, 80% of the reference number. It's actually 80% of the cows born in your herd in that year. So you can't weigh what's not there, I suppose. So it's 80% of the cows that's born, or the cows that's born.
So if he has 38 cows, it'd be 30 cows he has to weigh. Now, I'm not sure whether you said that the 2 cows had lost calves, so they will be counted because the calves, just say he had 40 cows, 80% of the 40 cows, he'd have to weigh 32 cow calf pairs.
Okay, yeah. So that's the 80% one. The number of animals to be genotyped each year will be at least equivalent to 70% of the beneficiaries yearly reference number. Also numbers, is really contributed. Okay, if I keep the reference, okay. No, so I'm going to leave. That's good. I'm board B approved, Andrew, as well as he's not, no hard question for you. So I'm good as herd stands for 23 and 24. You mentioned that there is more payment on the suckler cow as this scheme. Provided that all requirements of this program are met, payment 225 for the first 15 hectares and 180 for the remaining hectares up to a maximum payable area will be made. What is the potential of the other scheme? Will that be meal feeding and dung samples? So this is a question in from Ollie. Sorry, it's a little bit left to center. So Adam, maybe this is a crystal ball job for you. You mentioned that there is, what is the potential of the other scheme? This is the beef scheme that you were talking about there a minute ago, is it, I presume? And will meal feeding and dung samples be part of that?
Yeah, probably. We don't know yet the details of the beep scheme, but the chances are vaccination of weanlings around weaning, good practice around meal feeding around weaning, probably dung samples or fecal sampling for wintertime. Silage quality testing has been mentioned. So the weighing obviously has gone out of it, so it's all these other things. And that is the potential. Look, there's 28 million there. It depends on how many people apply for it, but that has the potential there of 60, 70, maybe even 80 euros. A cow in that beep, that replacement for the beep best scheme.
Okay, excellent. I'm going to keep going because I tell you we're getting towards the end of it. Skip question, Adam. If I have a reference number of 30 cows and my calving numbers are 27 cows for year one, do I have to put the yearly reference of 27 or do I leave it at 30 on the application as the 27 number is above the minimum 80% requirement?
No, 30. In the vast majority of cases, Jack, you stick with the highest reference number you can for that first year, because if you amend that down, it's going to amend your payment area down. So unless in exceptional circumstances where people have got out of or reduced their cows drastically and they want to reduce that reference period, for the vast, I'd say 90% upwards, okay, stay with the high reference figure on that first year. Yeah.
In addition to that, has a farmer to give the intended yearly reference number each year, and when will this have to be completed?
Yeah, so each year is going to be January time, and you're going to have to put it in each year. And the reason for that is, in the past, people were slow to go into BDGP because they felt, geez, 5 years here, I have to keep the cows for 5 years. This is actually an out that you can gradually reduce cow numbers and not get penalised over the 5 years of the programme. So that's to do with that yearly reference number.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Next question. How's things? Great show. A question in relation to skip. Are farmers paid only on the number of cows that calve in the year? And is there a minimum age that calves have to be before sold? Oh, calves sold. Right, talk to me here now.
So the calves sold is 5 months, and that's to do with the collection of records. If a calf sold before 5 months of age, that animal isn't eligible, say, for contributing to the 80% cow-calf pair's weight, or say that you haven't recorded all information on the animals born in your herd, so there's no payment on that animal.
Okay. Excellent. A question on the skip. I have doubled the number. This last chance are now. Look at this. I've doubled the number of cows that I have this year. I'm a young farmer. Is there a way that I can base the skip payment on this year's number and not on the reference years? Adam, you were talking. You saw this coming now, and he went off. Like, talk to me here. And he's doubled. Yeah.
I don't look at it. Look at no. It's highly unlikely. They can't. The department have stated they can't pay for an expanding herd or somebody to expand the herd. So. Unless, as we talked about already, in a case where somebody has been building numbers, there might be a case of increasing that reference number a little bit. But we'll get the application in and send off the email, but I'd be doubtful whether that will work.
Okay. Last one, I think, here. Darren, good comments on the suckler scheme, but a question for next week about native rare breeds. It was easy to get into acres with them, but the stars and the dams are difficult, even with high purity, and looks like we are going to miss out on suckler scheme. Any talk on getting native breeds in? Appreciate the help. Thank you.
This came up in June, Jack. There will be a derogation for native breeds. So this is recently added. So it is the advice still is to aim for as high star ratings as you can when you're going for your stock bull, say that. But on some breeds where it's just not possible, there will be a derogation for the Kerry cow, the Dexter, the Drimmon, and the Irish male. They're the native breeds that are here in Ireland at the moment.
Okay,
the Shorthorn
not a native breed? No.
Shorthorn is seen as being okay, that it's not needed, so it's not classified under that sort of status. And if you're looking at the Shorthorn breed, just 24 and 5 stars, I don't think that's an issue. They're very highly ranked on the maternal side.
Okay. So there is a derogation. They are going to get in. So, and when did that happen? When did that derogation come into play, Darren?
Yeah, I'm not sure, Jack, when that was added. I don't think it was in, Adam, at the beginning, but I think...
No, I'd say it's as a result, maybe a query just coming at those meetings, I'd say, and it was added in then. I suppose, look at it. In fairness to the department, they're trying to work with people, if they can at all, in terms of showing a bit of leniency to those breeds, yeah.
Okay, Andrew, one last one for you. I see here, and I think you've answered it. If I fall out of Borbia, do I fall out of the scheme? Can you fall out of Borbia, Andrew?
You can if you decide to leave the scheme. Basically, the way it operates is we certify the farms for 18 months. We're looking to get the renewal audits done around month 16 of that. And I suppose just to be very clear on it, the reason for doing your audit in month 16 of that period is that you have 2 months to address any non-conformances raised at the audit. So again, we want to leave plenty of time for guys between the audit and when their cert would lapse to make sure that they remain certified throughout the whole programme. So again, it's about farmers engaging with the auditor when we're trying to make contact. And typically we'll make 3 contact attempts, and with a missed phone call, the auditor will generally send a text to say, look, I'm your Borbia auditor trying to arrange an audit, etc. So we'll make 3 attempts to ring a guy. Sometimes we'll make 4 or 5, but ultimately, you know, we have to get a bit of, the farmer has to take a bit of responsibility too, in terms of if he's not taking the calls, it's hard for us to arrange anything with him.
Okay, folks, I've come to the end of the questions that we had in for this. I think we've had a good show. Obviously, it's skip centered, I suppose. We've been looking, but Adam, it's fair to say, like, we'll continue to take questions and answers because we haven't reached the final line on this just yet. Is that fair to say?
No, absolutely. We've loads of questions and funny, with questions you'd never even think of being a question. And so that's the important ones we want to get in, you know, because people have unique circumstances on their farm and there's unique questions to that. So we want to get in as much as that as possible. And we'll be printing these in the Farmers Journal over the next couple of weeks as regards the answers to those questions. So yeah, keep them coming in.
Darren, what was the mood like in Tuam, just as a finish up, as a final comment? I mean, in Ennis, there was a couple of kind of hard questions, we'll say, in terms of some guys that weren't happy for one reason or another in terms of the setup of the scheme. Like, but is there generally a positive mood on this scheme?
Yeah, sure. Farmers wanted to know the information, Jack. And in fairness, one of the things that the department I thought was good is the help desk before and after, let's say, where you can come and you can ask specific questions or you can bring your question down to the back or get assistance in joining up. But in general, I suppose, a lot of very fair and a lot of, say, I suppose, real concerns, a good few concerns in Tuam on Borbia and the fear, yeah. Say, because look, there is a significant number. There was 53% of farmers in BDGP farmers were in quality assured. So you're looking at maybe 8,000 to 10,000 farmers that are joining quality assurance for the first time, many of which maybe mightn't be that IT literate or that. So there is, I suppose, a learning curve there. And then the other side was around the 4 and 5 stars and a lot of questions on the reference number. I think that's okay. Is just by the makeup. Yeah. Any new scheme, Jack, is going to create questions.
Andrew, as a final comment from you, I mean, that helpline for you will probably be a go-to place, I'm sure, for a lot of farmers that, like Darren talked about, that maybe were in the BDGP and that weren't quality assured. That phone line, that help desk will be crucial to you, to Borbia as an organisation over the next couple of weeks and months.
100%, Jack. Look, the help desk was set up and we're aware kind of in terms of the demographics involved here, you know, that not everyone is going to want to do things online. So the things like sustainability survey and stuff, they can all be done with the help desk. All the closeout, the help desk are there to help with as well. And in relation to it, I suppose we're at all of those department meetings at the moment. We're also going to have representatives at each of the upcoming Suckler Farm Walks across the month of April. You know, they've been run by Chagas and ICBF. Right. So if you want to find the dates for them, just go on the websites, you'll find it. But there'll be someone there from Borbia kind of hanging out the back of the walk, available to talk to farmers. And again, because I suppose the public meetings are fantastic, but there'll be a lot of people at those who maybe don't want to ask a question, stand up in a forum like that. So, you know, I was there last night down in Kilkenny. I was there till about 12 o'clock. You know, so we're doing as much as we can to engage with people. We'll be on those farm walks. And again, they're a great opportunity for guys to ask a specific question about their farm. And also, you know, we'll be able to talk about what's the auditor looking for when they're in a different part of the farmyard and what's going to happen in the audit process. Because a lot of the fear, I think, is probably overplayed once you go through it. You know, it's not as bad as maybe some guys fear it is. And we did have guys stand up at some of the meetings and say, look, there was no harm to doing the Borbia audit from their perspective. It shouldn't be feared. That would be my
Yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, maybe sometimes we kind of read out because we get the negative questions into an extent. And yeah, but you're right. As you say, there's plenty of farmers. And as you said, the kind of the fail rate is relatively small in terms of the whole quality insurance.
Yeah, that, there isn't a fail rate as such. So what that is farmers who don't close out their audit. So, you know, again, you can't fail your audit, but what you can do is fail to close out the non-conformance. And I'd say if we, you know, went into those numbers again, we'd probably find a good few of those herds come back into the program anyway. So again, you know, we don't talk about fail. It's you're not eligible following your audit, but that's only because you've decided not to close out an action.
Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching and indeed for listening. Thanks to Andrew from Borbia and our usual contributors, obviously Darren and Adam, for taking those time to answer those questions that came in on the new SCEP scheme. Andrew, the key numbers for Borbia in terms of, I suppose, if for someone that wants to know more about the quality assurance, is AgriData on 062-54900. That desk is manned Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then again, there's the FRS help desk at 01524-0410. That's the SBLAS help desk at 01524-0410. 1-0 for anyone that wants more information. So, right, folks, that's as much as we have time for. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars on our podcast on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.